Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. So this is the month that legal recreational adult-use cannabis sales are supposed to begin in New York State. Call it marijuana, call it weed, call it pot, call it cannabis, whatever. But actual legal sales of actual legal product are the latest development in a complicated rollout that began when the state legislature passed and Governor Andrew Cuomo signed a legalization bill back in March of last year. New York does seem to be leading the nation in giving cannabis business licenses to people who were adversely affected in the past by cannabis prohibition, though a very specific subset of those people. We'll get into that a little bit. So we'll ask how it's all going now, plus other developments, including contaminants like E. coli being found in some of the fake legal weed shops that seem to be popping up everywhere, and what potential buyers can expect and when, all with the man who should know, Chris Alexander, Executive Director of the New York State Office of Cannabis Management, a job created for this new era. The New York Times also calls him one of the architects of legalization who helped lead the legalization push in the state. Director Alexander, thanks for coming on and welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Just to let our listeners get to know you a little bit, what did you do before becoming executive director of the Office of Cannabis Management? What kind of a career path leads to a job like this that never existed before?
That's a great question. Prior to this, I spent some time working in and around the cannabis industry. And prior to that was counsel in the New York State Senate, where I worked on issues of public protection, including our criminal justice reform issues, and as well as, you know, leading and advocating on cannabis reform. And I've also spent a great deal of time in, you know, the political world and in the advocacy world working to end the war on drugs.
And what of the main steps, what have they been for you to get this new legal industry off the ground? I mean, the news hook that everybody knows, I guess, and that is the reason we're having you today, is that dispensary licenses have now been handed out. Four in Manhattan, Brooklyn's are tied up in court, and there are all the other places. We'll go through that. But what had to happen first? Like, if they're going to have cannabis to sell, someone had to grow it in New York State, right?
That is true. And we started this, you know, way back when, in February, when the governor announced the Seeding Opportunity Initiative, where she positioned, you know, small farmers in the state of New York to be the first to grow and cultivate adult use cannabis. So, you know, way back when, in February, when that legislation passed the state legislature and was signed by the governor, is really when we got this ball rolling. But I would say even before then, it really starts with the advocates who worked on, you know, creating a framework for licensing, a framework for acknowledging the state's previous approaches to cannabis policy that gave us the tools really to prioritize small farmers and those who've been impacted. So, you know, a lot of the programs and the ingenuity that we're seeing come from regulators now is really stuff that came from the law that we're just putting into motion.
Yeah. And the law is that all cannabis sold in New York has to be grown in New York. Is that because it's still federally illegal, so you can't ship it across state lines?
That is absolutely correct. All current state programs have a similar restriction due to federal prohibition.
So where's that happening? On farms upstate, in greenhouses? I mean, do we have the climate for that in New York, for a plant that got famous for coming from places like Mexico and Hawaii and Jamaica?
Yeah, I mean, that was why the legislation, the conditional cultivator legislation, was so timely, that, you know, gave folks a full growing season. And it was taking place on farms all across the state, as well as in greenhouses and hoop houses. We had a pretty, you know, robust cannabinoid hemp agribusiness market here, where we had, you know, folks participating in growing hemp for research and growing hemp for its cannabinoid content to create CBD products. And so those folks ended up being the first to grow adult use cannabis in the state, utilizing, you know, some of the same land. But it really was grown across the state, and you know, the small farmers that did it, you know, did a pretty good job.
And staying on the farms for just a second, I know you gave out the first dispensary licenses to people with priority to people who've had past criminal exposure from the old marijuana laws and were also people with some business experience. But did this also apply to people in the growing sector in agriculture on the growing side?
No, the standards for the cultivation license was much more tied to previous participation in the hemp program and licensure with the New York State Department of Ag and Markets. So it is a bit of a different approach. But what I will say is important about that program and about that legislation that authorized those cultivators to start was that it also included a mentorship component, where folks who, you know, did not have their own farms or had some horticultural experience, but not necessarily, positioned right now to have a cannabis business, were given, access to those small farmers, to their experiences, to, really learn about compliance, right? And so we've also are in the process of getting ready to launch a compliance program that will provide some direction and will allow other folks to benefit off the experience of the small farmers who started this program just earlier this year.
Listeners, your questions welcome here for Chris Alexander, Executive Director of the New York State Office of Cannabis Management, with dispensaries going online this month. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can tweet a question at Brian Lehrer. How do you regulate safety and quality of the product? That would come under your office as well. And I mentioned in the intro some of the fake legal stores that have gone online that are selling cannabis that does not come through this system, being found recently in some samples to be contaminated. I'm looking, for example, at a Channel 7 headline here from yesterday: marijuana contaminated with potentially harmful bacteria allegedly sold at 20 unlicensed New York City stores. And these stories are talking about E. coli and other horrible things. So how do we know that won't happen in the legally distributed product? Is it regulated in a way that the black market isn't?
Well, I mean, I've got to push back, Brian, on that. The fake legal. These stores, these operations, they're all been selling illicit cannabis. All illegal operations, doing so without the authorization of the state, and are subject to the consequences from state and municipal governments. And so, does the regulatory framework, one of the big pushes and reasons for legalization was acknowledging that we could get a safer product to consumers, not only controlling the environments in which these products are grown, determining which pesticides, for example, can be used, what type of production standards have to be in place for operators, but also on the back end, the testing, right? And that's something that's incredibly important for consumers, folks who care about what they're putting into their bodies. And, one thing that we've been saying, and I've been saying, personally, since I stepped into this role, was, that regulation really is a great step in the right direction for folks who care about what they're putting into their bodies. And, as these illegal operations have started to pop up and proliferate, the education that we've been doing, not just to law enforcement, but also to consumers, reminding them that these shops are not selling products that have gone through regulatory oversight. Oftentimes, these products are failed products that have come from another state, And so we've been highlighting that as much as possible so that consumers are better aware of what they're putting into their bodies. But, they're going to suffer and have been suffering the consequences of that decision to operate, outside of the regulated market. And, our testing standards and what we've had in place here for our medical market has been strong, and what we're putting in place for our adult use market will be equally strong. And so, we're really frustrated with these operators, and we have started to take broader action and seize quite a bit of product now. But this is definitely an uphill battle here as we take on this really bad proliferation of illegal shops.
Do you need cooperation of the local DAs? I asked one on the show the other day, and the response was like, yeah, we care, but there are other things that are more important. I'm you know, wildly paraphrasing here, and I don't want to put words in that DA's mouth, but there seem to be so many of these stores that I wonder, I don't know if this has happened in all the other legal states, because I haven't followed the other legal states, but I wonder if this is actually a threat to the profitability, the viability of the legal weed dispensaries that are going to pop up and be outnumbered.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one, we absolutely need coordination from all parties, right? And, you know, even though, you know, we pushed to end prohibition and, you know, the disproportionate enforcement of cannabis laws in the state is something that I personally have fought many years to end. There is still a desire to protect what we're building. You know, you mentioned that we're creating a First in Nation program of creating opportunities for those who've been impacted. We can't do that without the cooperation of everybody involved. And I'm talking, you know, local governments, local law enforcement, as well as, you know, additional entities on the state level. And what we've started to see already is that cooperation. And of course, there's much more action to be taken. But, you know, the partnership of the New York City Sheriff's Office, for example, who has authority over tobacco shops, for example, seizing product in partnership with our office has been a really beneficial engagement. But, you know, really, it's a lot of education, as I've been saying, that has to start, right? That has to be the leading, because, you know, folks are going to continue to buy product until they see reports like the one that came out and acknowledging, you know, the harmful contaminants in those products. And I do believe that while this is a threat to a legal regulated market, you know, it is difficult for a product that is inherently unsafe to compete with a more quality product that's going to be coming from our small farmers and our producers across the state. And so there's always a proliferation of illegal activity. It's not always in the brick and mortar sense. Sometimes, you know, you get more delivery operations popping up in different states, but there's always some proliferation post-legalization. It's just that because of the unique, you know, layout of New York City, it's been particularly bad here. But we are taking action and we're working with our partners and need, you know, further collaboration across the state to make sure we can do so effectively.
Let's take a phone call. And again, if you're just joining us, my guest is Chris Alexander, Executive Director of the New York State Office of Cannabis Management, as the first dispensaries are supposed to open this month. Rich in Ithaca, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Ryan, such a big fan. Thank you so much. Long-time listener, first-time question asker. I have a question about the business side of the industry from a wine and spirit perspective. If you're a winery, you can sell in New York State, you can sell directly to a retailer. If you're a winery from outside of the state or from another country, you have to sell through a distributor. And I'm wondering if the cannabis industry has sorted out this, because for a long time, the distributors have been trying to get into that side of the business to mirror what they do in cannabis with what they do with wine. And I'm wondering where that is or where that's going. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's a great, great question. We actually, a lot of our approach to protecting smaller operators and creating opportunities for small operations is actually based off of the alcohol model, where we have, you know, two tiers in our system here in New York. So it is exactly, you know, the similar situation if you are an in-state you know, operator, particularly under the proposed micro business license that we've rolled out in our recent regulatory package, you will be able to sell directly to a consumer. But if you are operating as a cultivator or a producer, you do have to move through proper channels and cannot have a direct ownership in a retail operation. And so we did set up a similar structure where you have to kind of choose which side you're operating on. I did understand the question to also talk about the control that distributors have over, you know, the market. And what's different about our market is that cultivators are also allowed to distribute their own products, so that there won't be that same domination by, you know, the same distribution companies that exist in alcohol. So took a lot from alcohol, but also lessons learned from their experience as well.
Interesting. Janet in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Janet.
Good morning. I have a question. Let's say there was a shop that I think is going to become a marijuana shop. How will I know if it's legal or not? And then there are stores that have been selling marijuana, but only medical marijuana. Will I now be able to walk into the store and buy product? Thank you.
Thank you. Two great questions. How can a person tell with all these other stores selling marijuana? How can you tell a legal dispensary from an illegal dispensary?
Well, similar to alcohol and other regulated businesses, you know, every licensed dispensary will have to have, you know, its proper authorizations publicized. We're also working up a unique identifier for our regulated licensed dispensaries to distinguish themselves, as that will be more public facing. But, you know, we're also going to be distinguishing the illicit shops. And, you know, those who we've come in contact with have told to cease and desist operations, have seized product from, you know, similar to, notices that are put on the outside of non-compliant businesses. You know, they'll also be distinguished as well. And on the medical side, we do have medical dispensaries currently operational in the state. I think we have about 38 right now. The medical operators and those dispensaries are going to be allowed to transition into the adult use market and be able to sell adult use cannabis products after some time. But you won't. They will have to distinguish. They'll have to choose which of those the operators themselves will have to choose which of those dispensaries are able to transition into also being an adult use business. So that's
so it's not automatic.
It's not automatic, exactly.
So talk to our listeners about the social justice component of who's getting the dispensary licenses, because this, from everything I've been reading, is actually a New York State success story, whereas many other states that have legalized recreation adult cannabis sales have talked a good game on it and they never actually done it. But it's still this super narrow slice of the population where not only did you have to have a past certain kind of cannabis-related conviction, but you also have to be a successful business person already. So I guess my question is, why was it drawn that narrowly? Why not people who've had the relevant past convictions but want to try their hand at business right now also being eligible?
Yeah, no, I want to start with the why we're different here in New York. And, you know, it's actually something that, you know, interestingly enough, is pretty closely tied to the fact that, you know, our enforcement was so aggressive, right? And so, you know, part of what became a guiding principle of the legislation, of the campaign associated, and of the legislators and advocates that were fighting to end prohibition was that there's got to be some recognition of what has happened here. And so we've got these five priority groups identified in our law, you know, disabled vets, small farmers, people who live in communities that have been overpoliced, minority and women-owned businesses, but also those who've been impacted themselves. And so this card, conditional adult use retail dispensary opportunity, is just a tiny segment of the strategies that we're advancing to make sure that those groups are represented in a broader cannabis market. Mm-hmm. And by leaning into their previous business experience, you know, really we're just identifying and acknowledging, you know, transparently that we weren't yet set up in a way to provide the necessary business supports to make sure that these businesses are successful. So we have to lean into folks' previous experience. Now, every state that's tried to do this has you know, taken some approach to provide resources or provide priority, but rarely do we see the follow through and the combination of approach that we're putting forward here. So it's not just identifying folks who've been impacted. It's not just making sure that there's representation. It's also making sure that they have the proper supports. And by putting forward folks with already established business acumen, but who also are in our impacted group, we're ensuring that the resources that they generate is going to be able to then cycle back into our program and fund opportunities and additional training for folks who may not have the business acumen or the business experience, but also are similarly situated in terms of their experience with criminalization. You know, it's all about just understanding that, you know, this is a continuing, ongoing effort. You know, I've been saying it, it's a pithy line, but I really like it because it really explains our program. Well, equity is not a thing, it's the thing. Mm. You know, it's a central core component of our law, and it's what guides everything that we do here at the Office of Cannabis Management.
Did you say an advantage would be given to anybody from an over-policed community? Wouldn't that be like 5 million people in New York City?
Exactly. So when you said it's narrow, I mean, yes, a lot of people will be able to experience some form of priority based on the fact that their communities were over-policed. It's one of the interesting approaches in the law to make sure that there's an acknowledgement that prohibition had a broader impact than just on the individual who was incarcerated. It impacts an entire ecosystem, an entire local economy, you know, so we're acknowledging all that and trying to create strategies to give opportunities to those folks who've been impacted in some way or another.
That's really interesting. I didn't know all those pieces, so I'm glad you shared them. We're starting to run out of time, so just tell people who want to buy legally on a real practical basis what to expect now in the coming weeks. From what I've seen, the locations for the dispensaries have actually not been determined. So these 36, if I have the number right, licenses you've handed out, including 4 in Manhattan, and you could go through some of the other locations, but they actually don't have storefronts yet, and this is going to start as a delivery service?
Yeah, so with the authorization to have a dispensary, you're also allowed to deliver your products. Pre-ordered products can be delivered. And so essentially, yes, we are waiting for those locations to be finalized. And our partners over at DASNY have been driving that effort. They've been working around the clock trying to secure those locations and get them ready for operators. But, you know, that license that we're giving them, they have to complete some additional, you know, paperwork with us before being granted final licensure. But their provisional license has been given already. That as we work with them, they will be able to conduct some initial delivery services while they wait for the dispensaries to be completed. And so, you know, folks definitely should stay tuned with us at cannabis.ny.gov and follow our social media, NYS_cannabis, for constant updates. You know, as soon as delivery comes online and we have our initial dispensary opened, you know, we're definitely going to be blasting that out and making sure folks are able to, you know, frequent these businesses and reminding folks, of course, that all revenue, tax revenue is going to really invest back into communities that have been impacted and to state education as well as to drug treatment and prevention across the state. So it's really a full circle program. So we're really excited about getting these sales off the ground.
So at first, it's going to be like Grubhub for weed. You go online, you look at a menu of products, and you order from that, and then somebody comes in a car or on a scooter to your door.
Essentially, yes.
And just give us one word about this lawsuit, because you couldn't give out any in Brooklyn yet, and I think there's one other county. Us what the status of that is.
Yeah, so I don't want to go too much into litigation, but yeah, there were 5 regions that were enjoined. Western New York, Finger Lakes, Central New York, Brooklyn, and I think Mid-Hudson as well. And so we were enjoined by the court of giving licenses out in those areas. We have continued licensing in every other region, and we'll continue to do so. We are waiting to, you know, hear back from the court on some things, and you know, hopefully we'll be able to advance the program and do believe that we've taken a really strong approach to make sure that people have an opportunity to participate. And you know, that's been our goal from the beginning, making sure that people have an actual opportunity. And so we're going to keep pushing along that line.
Chris Alexander, Executive Director of the New York State Office of Cannabis Management. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Brian.